Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
Tonight, I wanted, before I re-engage with a series that I have been doing recently, I would like to share a little current event that we've had taking place in our country recently. Most of you have heard about the attempt to impeach President Trump, and I thought you might find this interesting. I was actually listening to or watching with my wife, watching an older DVD by Brannon House based on the book he wrote called Grave Influence. I think it was part two. It might have been part three. But in the course of listening to this, and it came out in 2010, but in the course of listening to this, it was interesting to note that Senator Lamar Alexander came up in Brannon House's discussion of grave influences of some of these people who've affected our culture and the world's culture throughout history, who are now in the grave, who are still influencing us. Lamar Alexander is not one of them, and that's in the grave, that is, but he's a senator, a GOP Republican senator, and he actually voted against having witnesses in the Trump impeachment, which is almost surprising when you look at his background. But I thought you, since Brannon House had mentioned it, and since his name had been in the news just about that same time recently, I thought you might find this interesting. He actually he said the actions of the president were inappropriate, but not enough to oust him, which, you know, spoken like a true rhino, I suppose. But anyway, this Senator Lamar Alexander, who I think may be retiring very soon, he was the former U.S. Secretary of Education under George H. Bush. And I have an article that I brought up from 2013. It's a little dated, but I think it's still relevant concerning, as I say, the fact that Lamar Alexander was just in the news recently concerning the impeachment trial. This article is called Senator Lamar Alexander, Neocon Trotskyite. You know, Trotsky was a Soviet Union, one of the founders of communism in Russia. Part two of this article, and it's by Kelly Nelson, and it's in the Freedom Outpost is the name of the on-site publication. Anyway, what Alexander believes, former Tennessee governor and U.S. Secretary of Education Lamar Alexander wrote a number of autobiographical books. Steps Along the Way, a governor's scrapbook, published in 1986, includes an interesting statement by Alexander. He said, "The book that changed my thinking the most during the last 10 years was A God Within by René Dubois." I think I'm pronouncing his name right. Dubois' book is subtitled A Positive Approach to Man's Future as Part of the Natural World. An examination of its contents revealed that Lamar Alexander has been highly influenced by New Age environmentalism. For example, Dubois asserts, "The Earth is literally our mother, not only because we depend on her for nurture and shelter, but even more because the human species has been shaped by her in the womb of evolution." He further asserts that our salvation depends upon our ability to create a religion of nature and substitute for magic suited to the needs and knowledge of modern man. And the author of this article says, "Ah, yes, he thinks pantheism is the answer." This Dubois. Dubois, in addition to referring to the earth as a living organism in page 43, also goes so far as to say this: "Both polytheism and monotheism are losing the ancient power in the modern world, and for this reason it is commonly assumed that present age is irreligious, but we may instead be moving to a higher level of religion." The fact that this book has so affected Lamar Alexander is noteworthy when one considers Dubois' view of science. Science is at present evolving from the description of concrete objects and events to the study of relationships as observed in complex systems. We may be about to recapture an experience of harmony, an intimation of the divine from our scientific knowledge of the process through which the earth became prepared for human life and the mechanisms through which man relates to the universe as a whole. A truly ecological view of the world has religious overtones. Dubois further states, one of the worst demonic forces in technological civilization is the craving for growth, which is enhanced by countless institutional devices ranging from national prestige to real estate promotion and other forms of commercial advertising. The author of this article says, what a bunch of New Age environmental commie gobbledygook. In other words, freedom and free enterprise is a demonic force that is killing the planet. Is it any wonder that is it any wonder Alexander is contributing to the goals of UN Agenda 21? Now, this really is interesting, of course, because I didn't know all this about Alexander, but having heard Brandon House speak to the issue of the propaganda that's put out through the educational system, et cetera, towards a liberal New Age type, you know, secular humanism, cosmic humanism type view of life, I just thought it was very interesting. As I continue to read this article, you get the idea of what I'm talking about. René Dubois, who sits on the board of Planetary Citizens, clearly expounds an evolutionary view of the world that is congruent with the Planetary Citizens' message. The world is one, humanity is one, and our future together is one. Apparently, now the author says, I guess we should all be holding hands and singing Kumbaya. Apparently, such an evolutionary spiritual view of man, replete with constant denigrations of Western civilization, have highly influenced the man who is at the helm of education in the United States. Is it any wonder, then, that Western values, such as free enterprise and the value of human life, are on a collision course with Eastern mysticism in the nation's classroom? As Tennessee's senior senator, his beliefs have not changed. He is an environmentalist and is on the board with UN Agenda 21. He is also behind everything Obama. Of course, Obama was president also during Alexander's terms, you know, not just George Bush's, George H. Bush's. It says he is an environmentalist and is on the board. Okay, he is also behind everything Obama, education czar Arne Duncan, and their buddy Bill Ayers are marketing an education restructuring. Remember Alexander's words from a 1990, of course, this goes back a few years, doesn't it? Southern Living magazine. He's been in the public view and in public service for quite some time. 1990 Southern Living magazine article. The conclusion I've come to, he explains, is that rather than tinkering with the same old vehicle, it would be better to start from scratch. And by the way, this was in 1990. I heard Brandon House's DVD. It was 2010. I heard it recently, but it was so that was 20 years after he made this statement, and Alexander was still consistently holding to these views. So even though this is an older article, he seems to be consistently following this pattern. I suggest we create a brand new American school, as different from today's schoolhouse as the Telegraph was from the Pony Express. Such a school, he continues, would probably start with babies and go through the eighth grade. It would be all year long. It would be open 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Every child would have his or her own computer and workstation. Every child would have a team of teachers that would stay with that child until graduation. This is total brainwashing of our children. Alexander does not even want the parents to instill any basic beliefs in the child before kindergarten. They want our children from cradle to grave to indoctrinate them with their politically correct communist beliefs in order to make them nice little brainless commodities for the New World Order. And that brings to mind, of course, George H. Bush's famous comment about the fact that we needed a New World Order. Remember that, some of you old-timers? The most shocking revelation with these facts is that these people are the hierarchy who are still in the business of restructuring and reforming education. They have already destroyed academic learning and with it generations of our children. So I just wanted to drop that in your lap before I, you know, continued with my regular series. Sometimes I'll do that if there's something I think is noteworthy current event-wise, which is pretty often these days. So I thought I would share that with you. Now, I want to re-engage with a series I started, and metaphorically speaking, I hit the pause button after my old computer gave up the ghost. The title of that series was One Way to apostasy. Of course, there's many. And I had previously looked at Charisma Sojourners and gave a partial examination of relevant magazines. You know, I was looking at this as one way, one of the many ways to apostasy, that is, these fake Christian magazines. And I've been talking about that, of course, with Christianity Today most recently. But before I go back to Relevant Magazine, which will be down the road in a few podcasts, and get back to that series, I want to finish looking at the Berean Call series again on fake Christian magazines, entitled A Berean Exercise, Christian Magazines by T.A. McMahon. Now, like I say, we already looked at part one concerning Christianity Today and Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I went further and examined Christianity Today and their desire to impeach, their move to the left politically and their desire to impeach President Trump. And I've probably said this before, but this is a spoiler alert. You know, I will be dealing in much greater detail with Christianity Today later in my own series. I'll go back to Relevant Magazine and then on to Christianity Today. But now, today, or tonight, we want to go on to part two of Mr. McMahon's series in the Berean Call newsletter. And so let's just read a bit of what he had to share here. Over my years of reading Charisma magazine, subtlety would not be a term I'd use regarding its biblical errors. They were typically more of the blatant billboard variety, but that's just my opinion. What I'm seeing now is a more sophisticated maneuver that is very seductive and far less obvious. This has been taking place among many of the Word Faith, Healing, and Prosperity ministries. Joel Osteen is a front runner in this approach. His father, John Osteen, was an old school Word Faith, with its unconcealed heresies, and Joel was his media director. Joel learned how to avoid his father's excesses in his own presentations, although they are still much the same. Mr. McMahon says, in my last visit to Bethel Church in Redding, California, I could see the same things taking place. It's not that anything had changed regarding its false theology, beliefs, or practices. It's just that they were no longer as obvious as they'd been in the past. A visit to Bethel's bookstore revealed what was foundational to its teachings for the 3,000 students who are enrolled on its campus. There were books by the Word Faith Positive Confession Old Guard of Kenneth Hagin, Charles Capps, E.W. Kenyon, Smith Wigglesworth, John G. Lake, etc. However, those writings were buried under current books by Bill Johnson, Chris Vallotton, Heidi Baker, Che On, Randy Clark, and others better known to the millennials and the upcoming generation. The May 2019 Charisma issue includes an example of the new tactic, and it gives me great concern. The two-page article was titled, "The Send Mobilizes Tens of Thousands to Kingdom Evangelism," and the subtitle declared, "We are here for the greatest move of God in human history." That grandiose overstatement outdoes the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Sadly, it is claimed to be for the sake of the evangelization of the lost, something that most Christians would be blessed to participate in. According to the article, over 50,000 people gathered on Saturday, February 23rd in Orlando, Florida, for the Send, a charismatic mega event that continued for nearly 12 hours straight. Andy Bird of Youth with a Mission, YWAM, one of the event's primary directors and also MCs, declared, "We are here because we are crazy enough to believe that we're here for the greatest move of God in human history." What Christian could object to the stated goal of the Send, which is to equip people to evangelize high schools, universities, neighborhoods, the mission field, and the foster care system? Speaker Banning Libesher urged Christians to take everyday evangelism seriously, emphasizing it as a matter of personal responsibility, he added. It is not your pastor's job to see your friend saved. Another speaker, Francis Chan, exhorted the young gathering to make sure that they were not responding to an event manufactured by man rather than the Holy Spirit, that they were being faithful in little things, sharing the gospel with their neighbors, friends, etc., before desiring to go to the ends of the earth to evangelize, and most importantly, that they were disciplined in reading the Word of God daily. Without knowing the Word, he noted, they would have nothing of value to share. Now back to comments by Mr. McMahon. Who wouldn't agree with at least some of the concerns of those speakers? So what's the problem or problems? The fundamental problem is that the crowd of 50,000 or so is being preached at to fulfill the Great Commission, that is, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you, Matthew 28:19, by sharing the gospel. Yet the gospel being preached by most of the speakers is false, and the Jesus being exalted is another Jesus, 2 Corinthians 11:4. And before I go back to this article now, I want to share an article from the time of this event in Christian Today magazine, and the title is Francis Chan Responds to Criticism After Being Accused of Appearing Alongside False Teachers. Francis Chan has said he will continue to speak at events that feature people with whom he disagrees theologically. The SEND is a stadium conference that has been hosted in cities nationwide since 2011 by The Call, an organization run by charismatic Christian evangelist Lou Engle, and I might add false prophet Lou Engle. With over 60,000 gathering at Camping World Stadium, the 10-hour February 23rd event was hosted by YWAM, Youth for Mission, Christ for All Nations, and Engle. The lineup included the likes of Chan, Benny Hinn, Todd White, Daniel Kalinda, and music from Hillsong, Young and Free, Jesus Culture, Tasha Cobbs Leonard, and Bethel Music. Chan, who is invited to speak at about 500 events a year, went on to explain why he sometimes accepts speaking engagements at places that tolerate theology that is different from his. This current experience has caused me to consider exercising more caution and to develop a team to help me research, Chan declared. That being said, I speak in many places where I am not in alignment theologically. Consider exercising more caution, you think? Anyway, Chan plans to work with the elders of his church to come up with more safeguards for future events. Chan stressed that he now recognizes that sometimes his participation in an event can give an impression that I align with every other speaker at the event. Again, I say, you think? Well, of course people are going to have that impression. I'm not sure what to do about that other than to tell you that I don't. You know, he doesn't align with every speaker. unless the elders of my church direct me differently, I will continue to be found preaching in venues with those I disagree. Now, somebody might say, someone like me might be saying, oh, well, I'm guilty of guilt by accusing him of guilt by association because, you know, he doesn't believe what they believe. But someone recently wrote an article, and I thought they had an excellent term for that, and I think I mentioned that before. It's not really so much guilt by association that's the problem. It's accessory to heresy. By you being there, along with proven heretics and false prophets, are you not being an accessory to the very heresies that they're expounding, even if you don't believe them? Because the people who follow you would say, well, if it's okay for Francis to be there, then it must be okay, basically. And I'll just have to look into some of these men of God. Hack. Anyway, Chan stated that while he strives to call out and denounce false preachers, it is hard to collect accurate data on their teachings and beliefs. I would say it's not hard at all. You know, we're responsible to make a defense for the true faith, and there are a multitude of resources available. Francis should be praying for discernment. He should be doing his own homework. He should be going to the many apologetic sites that expose word faith. I'll save that comment for last. He admitted that in the past he has erred in calling out the false teachings of preachers and pastors. So he's worried about making a mistake, you know, and calling somebody a false teacher who's not, which is valid, you know. But when you appear at an event where virtually everyone who spoke there was false, you got a real problem. Over the years, many things have been said about me that simply are not true, he says. I can't know the motives, but I am sure it is untrue. In the same way, friends of mine have been misrepresented and their reputations unfairly tarnished. Chan wrote, I want to make sure that I am not guilty of the same thing, and yet, I'll repeat it again, yet virtually everyone who spoke at that conference where he spoke was a false teacher or a false prophet. You know, you don't read in the Bible that Paul joined together with the false teachers of his day, or Peter or any of them, they did not go anywhere and say, hey, let's all get together and see if we can win people together to some kind of nebulous God. You know, they called out false teachers. They didn't link up with them or help give them a greater, you know, platform to send out their deceptions. Okay, so back to the Berean Call article. Let me look my, okay. What is this false gospel? Nearly all of the older Word Faith preachers, Hagen, Copeland, Price, the Crouches et al., were and heavily influenced by E.W. Kenyon, Smith Wigglesworth, and Paul E. Bilheimer. Of Jesus, the latter wrote, he was made sin, impregnated with sin, and became the very essence of sin on the cross. He was banished from God's presence as a loathsome thing. He and sin were made synonymous. It was not sufficient for Christ to offer up only his physical life on the cross. His pure human spirit had to descend into hell. His spirit must not only descend into hell, but into the lowest hell. The Father turned him over not only to the agony and death of Calvary, but to the satanic tortures of his pure spirit as part of the just desert of the sin of all the race. As long as Christ was the essence of sin, he was at Satan's mercy in that place of torment. While Christ identified with sin, Satan and the hosts of hell ruled over him as over any lost sinner. During that seemingly endless age in the nether abyss of death, Satan did with him as he would, and all hell was in carnival. Now back to McMahon's comments. Dave Hunt, noting the blasphemy and absurdity of such a belief, pointed out that that would make Satan our co-redeemer. Yet there's much more to that shameful heresy and contradiction to the biblical gospel. Jesus paid the full penalty for the sins of mankind as he hung on the cross, not in hell. Following the 3 hours during which the sky had turned black, he cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He, and only he, as the sinless man, a sinless God-man, could personally experience what was necessary to fulfill divine justice. When that payment for the infinite penalty of sin was completed, his last words were, it is finished, tetelestai, which means in Greek, paid in full. It was a counting term. And Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Notice that it was into the Father's hands that Jesus committed his spirit, not into Satan's, in order to be punished. There's nothing in Scripture that even hints at Satan torturing Jesus as his payment for sin, especially in hell, which is the last place the father of lies wants to be, although that's where he will spend eternity. That is a false gospel, a doctrine of demons. It is also a false Christ. What those who hold to such a belief write about him never happened to the biblical Jesus. Is that the gospel that the sin wants the 50,000 young people to take to the ends of the earth? Someone might argue that not all the speakers believe that gospel. Not all? How many such preachers at a false gospel would it take to lead the young people astray, especially when they are up there with the leader they like? Perhaps some of the younger leaders don't believe that false gospel, but no one can be certain, because a clear biblical gospel was never given throughout the 12 hours of the conference. Since some of the elder statesmen of the Word, Faith, and Healing and Prosperity Gospel were there to influence those gathered, there's little doubt that they held to that heretical belief. As mentioned earlier, one of the speakers, Francis Chan, encouraged the crowd to discipline themselves to read the Scriptures daily as he does. One value of that important habit is biblical discernment, which somehow seems to be seriously missing from Chan's stated diligence. His history of defending the Roman Catholic Church with its false gospel of works seems to pale in light of a staggering number of heresies held and practiced by those among whom he preached at the Synod. And now I want to move, before we go back to finish that article, and I may not have time for all of this, let's see. This is from Lighthouse Trail's current newsletter. Catholic priest believes Francis Chan heading into Catholic Church based on Eucharist sermon. Francis Chan, author of Crazy Love, is one of the most popular authors and speakers within the evangelical church today. He's been the subject of a number of Lighthouse Trail's articles based on his ecumenical activities, as well as statements he made threatening that God will destroy those who challenge Christian leaders. Last week, Chan gave a sermon promoting the Catholic view of communion, that is, the Eucharist, which led to several online responses, one of which was a Catholic priest who weighed in with a YouTube video expressing his zeal and belief that Chan is about to convert to the Catholic faith. For those who may not know what communion means, according to Catholic doctrine, it is the belief that the bread in communion actually is transformed by a priest into the literal body and presence of Jesus Christ. Roger Oakland, author of Another Jesus, The Eucharistic Christ and the New Evangelization, explains, the Catholic Church's doctrine of the Eucharist is based on the concept of transubstantiation, a belief that the Catholic priest has the power to turn a wafer of bread into the actual body, soul, and divinity of Jesus. This is the very foundation of the Catholic faith. As Oakland documents in his book, the Catholic Church stands so strongly on the Eucharist that the canons and decrees of the Council of Trent states that anyone who denies this view is anathema, or cursed. If anyone says that Christ received in the Eucharist is received spiritually only, and not only sacramentally and really, let him be anathema. With such strong admonitions from Catholic doctrine, it's easy to see why a Catholic priest would believe Francis Chan's sermon, heavily promoting Eucharistic communion, indicates Chan is about to convert to Catholicism. Now, further on in the article, be that as it may, a growing number of evangelicals such as Joseph Prince and Bill Johnson are beginning to explore and even embrace the Catholic view of the literal body, blood, and presence of Christ in communion, priest or no priest. Roger Oakland explains how dangerous this is and how it is helping to bring about a one-world religion that worships a false Christ. He exhorts Christians to ask the question, is there a difference between the Catholic Eucharistic Christ and the Jesus of the Bible? We believe emphatically that there is, as Oakland documents in his book and in his article, Why the Catholic and Emerging Church Eucharist Does Not Line Up with Scripture. Whether Francis Chan is going to become Catholic or not, only time will tell. But two things we know for sure, the Catholic Church uses as its strongest means the Eucharist as an evangelistic tool to bring back the lost brethren, the Protestants, into the Mother Church. And second, even if Francis Chan himself does not convert, he is opening the door and showing the way to his followers to enter the Roman Catholic Church. And no doubt, many will, as they seek to experience this Eucharistic Christ who will ultimately put them into the arms of Rome. And once again, accessory to heresy. This is a perfect example of it. Once again, as regardless of what Chan, where Chan ends up, you know, his affinity towards these Catholic views and beliefs can certainly cause many of his followers to stumble. And he it always amazes me that some of these folks don't get that. They don't realize that. Now, I'm just about out of time, so we will finish this article next week and continue on